Now, about practical applications of the basic definitions of Scientology. Basic definitions of Scientology have to do with self-determinism, other determinism, good, evil, many such definitions. They are all useful and workable in processing. You can take almost any definition and process with it directly, because there are several types of processes, any one of which applies to definitions. Now, if we combine definitions and the knowledge of the classes of processes, we immediately open the doors on Lord knows how many, quote, techniques, unquote. And as a very good auditor, you should know that any technique merely stems from this practice of combining a definition with a type of process. Now, the types of processes can be broken down roughly into the subjective and objective processes. That's the first classification, those processes which research the individual's own universe and separate out of his universe other universes of other people or beings, are, of course, subjective processes, and those processes which apply to the physical universe are objective processes. We merely separate the physical universe as another universe out in this broad category, because when you address it with the preclear, you produce your most sweeping results. His basic trouble, of course, has occurred on the wide playing field of the physical universe, which is the common agreement ground of all beings. And so we use that as an objective process. It doesn't mean that it's any less a universe than a preclear's own universe, or any more a universe than a preclear's own universe. It's simply that he is, after all, in a body which has, as its common view, the physical universe. Therefore, the physical universe is more often with him than any other single universe, and so we take the subjective as meaning his own and other people's universe, and the objective as meaning the physical universe. These are all universe processes. Now, there are, as far as that is concerned, you have that category. Any process which drops into the mechanical aspects of space, energy, and matter would come under the heading of these subjective and objective processes. You see that. But amongst the subjective processes are the most important processes. The reason why the subjective processes come into question is because an auditor is prone to address energy and objects which are in the preclear's own universe and in other universes which have collided with his own, but not the physical universe. You follow this. The auditor addresses energy flows, solid masses, mock-ups, you might say, in the preclear's own and, well, call it his own universe, confused with other people's universes. And when this occurs, we get a limitation on the process. There's just so much energy generated there, you see, and the generation of that energy is limited in numbers of ways, and it's very easy to exhaust out of the preclear's own universe and other universes of that character supplies of this energy. And when he is not creating energy, pushing around flows then becomes actually detrimental to the case. Now, we say push around flows and so forth. What we mean by that, processing by concept, processing by mock-ups exclusively, processing by match terminaling, double terminaling. In other words, this is handling of really non-created but existing energy. And we get the definition of a limited process. A limited process is that process which depends upon the conversion of energy in the preclear's own bank. That's a limited process. So any process which depends upon this is very limited. That doesn't mean that it isn't useful. You can get some man, for instance, who is upset about his boss, and you can ask him, if you haven't processed him very much on this subject, you can ask him to match terminal his boss, that is, say, get a picture of his boss facing a picture of his boss, and the charge will immediately reduce, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, so that he will no longer be angry with his boss. But if you were to do that over any length of time, why, you would get into difficulty. Now, melting down masses of energy with the introduction of solvent particles is itself a limited process. There's no process whereby you have the preclear mock things up and then have mobs of people standing around below the mock-up looking up admiring this object. That's admiration processing. It's the introduction of a solvent particle. Well, what happens there? All the solid masses which the preclears accumulated begin to come apart. It'll get rid of a specific illness or something of the sort. It will change the character of his bank, but if run any length of time at all, and I mean, half an hour or something like that, it's liable to make the preclear ill. Here is just the conversion of existing energies. Now, on the subjective processes, those processes which immediately advance the ability of the preclear to create and destroy energy are not limited. They're just not limited. They just go on and on and on. If they bring into being the actual creation of energy and its banishment, energy or objects, its banishment. Now we have the contest going here between whether or not we're going to perch the preclear up on the center of this create, survive, destroy curve, which is the cycle of action of the messed universe. That cycle of action is a curve which begins with create, goes through survive, and ends up with destroy. We're going to choose whether or not we're going to perch him up on the top of that survive and just lock him up there and survive, which means that he and his ideas, unchanging, will persist forever. Or we're going to bring him out into a greater degree of freedom or looseness. Now, the peak of that curve is in itself an entrapment. As an individual falls away from an ability to destroy and create, he gets higher and higher toward the top of this curve. He hangs up in the center of the curve, in other words, and he persists. Those people, for instance, who do not change immediately under processing are simply hung up in the middle of this curve. That's all. They're surviving. So all their ideas are surviving and everything else is surviving. Now, if you run energy conversion processes on these, you're, of course, just aiding and abetting their being on the center of this curve. All right. Now, the longer you keep them up on that curve, the less they're going to change. What's wrong with them is they're getting further and further from destroying things and further from creating things to a point of where they're only persisting with what they have. We don't want the preclear there. We want him over toward being able to create and over toward being able to destroy. And so we want him off the top of that curve. We want to get him away from the idea that he has to do all sorts of weird, odd things in order to survive. His general goal and drive is in the direction of survive. Life is surviving. And the funny part of it is life can't do anything else but survive. And as a matter of fact, the fellow is being redundant. He's compounding what is an impossibility. He's trying to keep from surviving in some cases because survival itself has become too arduous. Well, just before this occurs, he, of course, has gone in the direction of survive, 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 survive. Well, the longer he goes in the direction of I have to persist, I have to persist, I have to persist, the more likely he is to come into the zone of that peak whereby survival itself becomes terribly onerous because he can't change as a form. A thetan cannot do other than survive. And the auditor who learns this has become a very wise auditor. A thetan just keeps going on and on and on. And his main difficulty is quite something else. His main difficulty is to vary his survival. Vary his survival enough so that he remains interested in surviving. That's his main contest. And so he has fought and resisted the idea of continuous on-and-on survival. Well, let's take this subjective-objective process. Let's find out where it will work and where it won't work, and it works as long as we are creating and destroying in terms of spaces and energies. And where an objective process works is where it coordinates the individual and his efforts and activities with what we call present time. The more we get him in present time, well, the better off he is. And that, of course, is an objective process because present time is going on all around him. Time is the co-action of particles. That's the definition of time. And this co-action of particles, on which he is dependent and which he's paying some attention to and so forth, is in the physical universe. So all time processes are then and should be objective processes. Now let's get much simpler than this, and let's break these processes down into classes as follows. Processes which address postulates, processes which address space, and processes which address objects. Now they could be you might say objective and subjective postulates, objective and subjective spaces, objective and subjective objects. Well, what happened to the energy? Well, the more you process energy, the more trouble you're going to get into. If you process objects and you process spaces, you will take care of all the energy processes. We drop energy out of that because it's something that is somewhere on the curve. You might say the object is the accomplished fact. The space is the fact beginning. What is an object? An object is a collection of collapsed spaces. That's an object. So we give a fellow space, we'll take his objects apart. We give him objects, and we take his spaces apart. We put his attention on object, we collapse his space. We put his attention on space, we uncollapse his objects. If he didn't create or destroy anything while he was going along on this curve, he would soon be in a difficult state. He would just get everything into the form of flowing energy. You know, he wouldn't have totally uncollapsed all of his objects, and he wouldn't have totally collapsed all of his spaces. What he'd be left with is the intermediate. Objects on the way to forming, or objects on the way to unforming. And in both of those cases, we have energy. So we don't process energy. I repeat that again. We do not process energy. And just in case you... that remark doesn't survive. We don't ever process energy. Because energy is the intermediate state. Now, let's look at postulates. You say objective and subjective postulates. All right, then the pre-clears made a whole bunch of postulates, and other universes have made postulates, which he thinks are his postulates. And then there's the postulates of this physical universe out here. These postulates are best found and studied in a textbook on physics, chemistry, nuclear physics, something of that order. The most religious man in the world, by the way, is the nuclear physicist, because he alone is studying and is cognizant of all the postulates of God. That's a joke. That's fact. And anybody who starts in to the study of nuclear physics will eventually wind up studying God, because he gets down to the irreducible nothingness of an atom which isn't there. You know, he's found a smaller particle, and then he's found the smaller particle inside the particle, and then he's finally found himself standing there looking at nothing. So he immediately conceives that he must be looking at God. And the fact of the matter is he has been all this time studying the postulates of God. Now, the postulates of God would be those, for our purposes, those agreed-upon postulates which have become so fixed as to materialize in the form of the immense universe. We don't take the attitude that somebody made all these postulates and we fell for it. We take the attitude that, because it works better, that thee and me had a lot of agreements amongst ourselves, and they got solider and solider, and the next thing you know, we were looking at a rock. Now, where the preclear is unable to change, why, there we hammer hard. We're trying to cure this character of surviving. Let's get right down to earth about it. Too much love of living and too much fear of dying makes cowards of us all. Let's just reduce that high-flown piece of poetry from somebody back on the track, and put it into this phrase. That fellow who gets completely fixated on survival becomes, perforce, cowardly in his conduct.
True.
He just falls away from everything. He won't have anything to do with anything. He's afraid people are going to hurt him. He's afraid this is going to hurt him, that's going to hurt him. Because survival, in essence, is a falsity. We could say survival is a form. It's very desirable to have a form survive for a while or so on. Very desirable. But the individual gets himself so identified with a form that he thinks that he himself can be made not to survive. He's completely inverted when he does this. When a Thetan believes at length that he can be caused not to survive, in other words, that he as a Thetan can be killed, he's frankly gone. Because the fact of the matter is nothing can really touch a Thetan. He gets himself associated with and identified with objects, energies, masses, one sort or another, and these don't survive, so he says to himself, well, now I have to survive. Well, that is the single error to which he's prone. Into that pit drops all his hope of liberty that he himself has to survive. Every time he believes implicitly that he has to survive and that there's a great liability in his survival, he actually reduces his survival potential because he does not make those actions necessary to hit the continued survival of those forms which surround him. He gets afraid to fight. It may appeal to an individual, that he just sit back and defend, always defend and never attack, because this universe and any universe tends to punish communication. That's the single crime you can do in the physical universe, is communicate. There is no other crime. And he gets the idea after a while that he'd better just defend. Well, actually, a Thetan is on his best ground while he's attacking. He always wins attacking. If he has to be in interpersonal relationships, he always wins attacking if he's going to fight. There are two choices. You either attack or don't engage in the warfare. You attack or neglect. The second you begin to defend, you've set up the very mechanism which the physical universe loves to behold. It's an inflow universe. It inflows from 360-degree periphery. All around. Sunlight, sunbeams, sound, all these things. Pound, pound, pound at every quarter of an individual. So the second he sets up ramparts and says, I am going to hold this line until all eternity passes by, bang, 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 bang. All he gets is the total combined efforts of the universe. He's just asked for it. Whereas, as long as he is attacking, he has aligned his vectors at least with the physical universe. That's all the physical universe does, is attack. Doesn't defend the thing. All right. We get this pretty clear in a state of mind where he's got to defend. He's got to keep what he has. Everything around him has to survive. Ooh. After a while, he's in that defense rampart, and the physical universe is pounding at him, bang, 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 from all quarters. And we've got somebody that is difficult to drag out of a head. And that's about all there is to it, as far as the mechanics are concerned here. Now, those processes which address postulates, of course, most rapidly change the individual's mind, because in the final essence, what are we looking at when we look at an object? We're looking at a postulate. We're looking at the postulate, the condensed. What are we doing when we're looking at space? We're looking at a postulate, which is extended. It only extends because of an opinion. When we study gravity, we're studying a consideration. You can actually process out of an individual the consideration of gravity, and he'll levitate, he'll get lighter. Now, what is our highest level of process then? Is that level space or objects? Never energy, I cautioned you, and I caution you again, never energy. But is that highest level processing of space, processing of objects? No, because space in itself is an I don't know proposition. The more space he's got, the less he knows. And energy, being a piece of energy, is to be as dumb as a piece of energy. Really, as stupid as a piece of energy. So those aren't in the direction of knowingness at all, are they? And yet you have to process those things to some degree, or nothing much will happen to your preclair. You have to process them because his problems with them are so great that he can't tolerate them, and so their possible existence is so much of a threat to his case that his case doesn't progress unless you give them some attention. But supposing you gave them 100% attention and processed nothing but space and objects. Ooh. Now, those processes we call mechanical processes. You have to process to some degree, you understand. But to make an end all of it, mm-mm. If you had to choose between postulate processes and processes which had to do with space and objects, and could only use one or the other, oh, you would always take postulates. Always take postulates. Never miss on that. Now, you process havingness only because the individual is in the middle of a piece of energy. He's very convinced it exists, and so are other people. And the stresses and strains on it are so great that he can't take his attention off of it. So, to some degree, we have to process objects, don't we? We want him to be 3 feet back of his head and get disassociated a little bit from this terrific concentration on a body, and so we find out he doesn't have any space. No concept of space. Space doesn't exist, so how can he be 3 feet back of his head? So therefore, we'd have to process a little space. Now we get him out 3 feet back of his head, and all of a sudden it occurs to him, you know, I'm just a thought. And he feels very sad about this, because all of his randomity, his fun, in other words, or his game, consists of handling spaces and energies and objects. So if his game consists of handling spaces, energies, and objects, well, for heaven's sakes, you don't want to take the game away from him entirely. It just disheartens him enormously to find out that he's just a thought. There's many a boy that you'll exteriorize and chase around on a grand tour and interiorize and exteriorize a few times who will just look at you, the saddest person you ever wanted to meet. Oh, you think, well, gee, what have I done to him with this process? And you just took away all of it. He had his havingness, that's all. He has to have this in order to have a game. He's convinced of this, so what do? You remedy his havingness. You put up 8 anchor points and drag him in, 8 anchor points and drag him in on himself, and put up 8 anchor points without letting them explode. You just go through this process for a very short time, and you've remedied his havingness. Now he's happy about it. He can have some energy, and he will go cheerfully upon his way. So you see, you do have to process these mechanical processes in order to bring an individual out along the line, merely because his game consists of mechanics. And as his game consists of mechanics, so in order to play the game, he had better be able to handle spaces, energies, and objects. So we process that in order to improve his game, you might say. But the end all of existence is not an object or a space. If your preclear won't change his mind, if he just won't change his mind, he won't get well. He won't be able to handle anything. The funny part of it is, unless you can get him to change his mind, first and foremost, you won't be able to get him to handle spaces and objects. Even in order to get him to handle spaces and objects, you've got to get him to change his mind. Well, how can you change his mind? How to change the ideas of a man. That's what you're studying. You're not studying the ideas of a man. You're studying how to change the ideas of a man. And if you want to go into a full all-out control, you could even say you were studying also how to control the ideas of a man. Control consists of start, stop, and change. So if you wanted to put an individual in control of his own ideas, you'd have to put him into a condition where he could start, stop, and change them. If he can't change them, he can start them. If he can't start them, he can stop them. If he can start and stop them, then he can change them. Definition of control, start, stop, and change. So any start, stop, and change that you process will promote his changing of ideas. Any inability of an individual to control his ideas will be remedied by patching up his ability to start, stop, and change his ideas, you see. He has ideas running. He should be able to start them and stop them and start them and stop them and start them and stop them. Next thing you know, he's perfectly willing to change his ideas. Start, stop, and change with relationship to postulates. Quite an interesting process. Now, more specifically, the processing of postulates is then senior to the processing of anything else. There are two ways to process postulates. One of them is to add them or delete them from the bank. You add or subtract them from the masses of energy around which the Frequeler is surrounded. That is not good. That's really not a good process. It works to some degree. It's like match terminaling, so forth. You'll pretty soon find out that you've given him a scarcity of deep unknowns and hidden significances and so forth, and he'll be unhappy about it. So we'd better leave alone this idea of adding and deleting ideas to the energy and masses around him, and just go at it straight out to change his ideas. Now, let's take that axiom about gradient scales. Let's find out if you change his ideas a little bit, you can change his ideas a lot. If you are going to change his ideas, you'd have to look at what his goals are. And his goals, of course, in the first essence, is his general goal is to survive. And so you'd have to change his ideas about survival. Well, his existence is built up out of affinity, reality, and communication. So if you changed his ideas about communication, about affinity, and about reality, you would, of course, change his ideas about understanding. You'd make him brighter. If you made him more able to communicate, you'd make him brighter. If you made him more able to have affinity, you'd make him brighter. And if you increased his ability to agree and disagree with freedom, you'd make him brighter. We play this triangle, and so we increase his understanding. Well, now as we increase his understanding, we get him up above the level where he thinks he has to survive forever because his understanding of his existence begins to exceed this. It begins to exceed the idea he has to survive forever. So, postulates would be a primary goal. And postulates related to communication, affinity, and reality would be the first and foremost target of the auditor. Now, there are many ways to change those postulates, but remember, we have gradient scales. Main trouble, you're pretty clear, he has an intolerance of viewpoints. He can't tolerate viewpoints. He has no freedom to like or dislike. He has no freedom to agree or disagree. He has no freedom to communicate or not communicate. His self-determinism on ARC is shot. He is other-determined on ARC. You want to make him self-determined on ARC. What prevents him from being self-determined on his ARC? His postulates, his ideas that he is not. It's the only barrier he has. That's even more important than his ideas about barriers. Now let's just strip down the whole thing and let's take a look at the entire problem of auditing and discover that we are trying to change individuals' ideas so as to increase their freedom on the subject of affinity, reality, and communication. When you understand that totally, a case will fall apart in your hands with great ease. You have to know what affinity is, what reality is, what communication is. Use the gradient scale, such a command as, give me somebody you wouldn't mind liking. Give me somebody now that it'd be all right to dislike. You'd be surprised, but these very, very simple little questions are stoppers. The fellow looks like he's run into a brick wall on someone. This, as always, is, of course, the most important level of entrance, because ARC is the bridge between the postulate and the game. And we're directly processing this little bridge, this little triangle with ARC. And it's the difference. It's the postulates he's hung up on, because he's trying to play the game, and therefore his mind is made up in certain ways about these postulates. And as such, he is unable. You have to increase his ability to view. Increase his tolerance to view. If you're going to increase his tolerance to view, you have to increase his ability to perceive, don't you? Increase his ability to perceive, we come right back to the triangle again. And so anyway, we work our way through processing. We come back to this triangle, and we come back to ARC and postulates regarding ARC. So the best processes we have are those postulates which change people's minds in order to change their ARC. We've got to change their mind about their ARC, and by doing so, we increase their tolerance of viewpoints. In that way, we can make an individual free, and it's the short road, even though sometimes it appears to be a long one.